So we just mentioned today is the Tirubhav disappearance day of Srila Gurudev's Divine Mother, affectionately known to devotees as Thakur Ma, but her name is Srimati Tarangini Devi. And I think, like, such a small lady in stature, but like, what is her contribution to the world? Gurudev himself. And Gurudev, sometimes being like a naughty child in her presence, is very, to me, I mean, making me smile, because he's showing that to me also. Like, there's my mother, and I'm being naughty. You know, he still has this playful, childlike nature in that time, but. Because we could say, when Gurudev, Madhusudan Murad, I'm sure, knows more, but Gurudev, we know when he joined the Math, he was 17. Because previous to that, his mother and father, they're praying for a son and praying to Mahadev Shiva. And what is the deity? Buru Raj? Yes. And he's like, we've seen, beneath the earth, Bu. And they're praying to him, like, please, we want a, you know, male child. And the inspiration came from Shiva. Yes, but understand, this boy, he'll be the delight of everyone. I'm sending one of my own men. And telling many different things and saying, and at the age of 17, he will take sannyas. It's like, as we're preparing for Gaur Purnima, the appearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when, was it Nilambar Chakrabarti, who is astrologer, but it's meant, just as a side point, the Brahmins of the day, they have, like we saw with Gurudev, by his Brahminical nature, he has medical knowledge, astrological knowledge, the knowledge of scriptures, ritual, like everything. So Nilambar Chakrabarti, he's the special, but other Brahmins come after the appearance of baby Nimai. I mean, Sita, Advaita's wife Sita, named him Nimai for protection. And one of his pastimes was like, remember, he's descended to inaugurate Nam Sankirtan. So one thing Vrindavan Das Thakur points out is at that time there's a lunar eclipse, and although these people had fallen away from pure Vedic culture, to what extent? They're spending elaborately on the marriage of cats, spending elaborately on the marriage of monkeys, like having a monkey wedding, and just, you know, they were off. But laden with all this spiritual knowledge, Navadvipa's a center for scholars and so many things. The center for scholarship. But they, in their culture, they think like when Ekadashi comes, then you pick up the drum, the kartals, the mridangas, and do a little Nam Sankirtan. Or, you know, a lunar eclipse is coming. Oh, then we. You know, we're break out the mridanga and the kartals. We need to do some, you know, Hari Kirtan because of that lunar eclipse. And they're chanting other things too. They're worshiping Devi. They're doing all kinds of things. But as the Lord would have it, by it being a lunar eclipse, that's when they think, we need to chant the name of Hari. So when he is appearing, they're all singing Hari. Right? And maybe you mentioned something about the Muslims. They're making fun of them. They're also going, Hari, Hari, you know. So everybody's chanting Hari. And they're bathing in the Ganga because that will also be the appropriate spiritual activity to deal with this lunar eclipse. So the whole of Navadvipa is resounding with Hari Kirtan. Right? So that's one of his play, but as a child, a baby, he'll start to cry, And the only thing that will prevent him from crying is if people do Nam Sankirtan. So the ladies, like, he starts to cry and they go, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And then gradually he stops crying and starts smiling and kicking his leg and like dancing. And then if they stop, then he goes, and then he goes, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And that makes him smile, right? So that's one of his pastimes. So why did I say that? Because, Gurudev, when these astrologers come to Nilambar Chakrabarti and other Brahmins, he's saying some things about him. We know the Shukla Rakta Tata Pita. Previously in another age, this child's complexion was white. You know, and we can say that was like Sveta Varaha, or, you know, and Rakta, one in one incarnation was red, and Pita, he's sometimes Shyama, you know, blackish, like in the Dwarpar Yuga Krishna, and other times he's golden, he appears in different ways. But we're told one astrologer, one Brahmin with astrological knowledge, he's saying how, like, as Narayan himself liberates the world, this child has that capacity, and they're saying all these wonderful things that he will do, that we can see in his horoscope. But he can also see in the horoscope that he will take sannyas. Now, devotees might think, like, oh, such a wonderful thing. You know, when I was in Los Angeles, the president of that temple many years ago, we had something like 70 children. Vaishnava Maharaj, Shruti Sravaprabhu, he was one of the Guru Kula teachers, actually. He had like 12 kids living with him. He was teaching them slokas. But anyway, sometimes you'd see these little kids playing, like four-year-olds, and you'd see these two boys, and they would have Bahir Vas, Uttariya, little dandas, and you go, what are you doing? Like, we're playing sannyasi. You know, like, you know, they'd go around with their dandas, and, you know, and if they were cursing someone, they would say, you can go eat meat. That was like the worst thing you could say to somebody. But they're thinking, oh, sannyas is such a great thing. But within the Vedic culture, they're saying that means he will leave home, leave the wife, the family. Like, remember Mamta. Did you see her in Australia?
Yes.
Okay. Remember, one of the reluctance in her family of her taking Diksha from Gurudev was that their understanding that then you belong to Guru. So it's a mixed thing. Like, on the one hand, good, but they're saying, like, if she takes Diksha from him, then she belongs to him. Then what he says, that is the ultimate authority and must be followed. They know that. So it's this odd thing. So this one Brahmin, he can see in the chart that Mahaprabhu is going to take sannyas. But he's thinking, if I say, like, we just had all these things and everyone's going like, Jai, you know, Haribo, they're all happy. And then if I say that, and then he will take sannyas, then everyone will go, oh, you know. And they're with a little baby, and so he doesn't say that. So when what is conveyed from Shiva, that he will take sannyas at 17, their way of digesting that is there's something popular. It's a deviant practice in Bengal, but called Shiva sannyas, where they take sannyas for like 2 weeks. Just like in this country, like the monk, they have some glorious equivalent. So they're thinking, oh, all right, it'll take sannyas for a month, or you've seen it.
Yes.
And, you know, and some of our Bengali devotees who come to the mat, they did that when they were teenagers. So they're thinking like that, okay. But when Gurudev was telling me that story once, he said, they did not know it would be forever. So when that time came, he's 17, and Guru Maharaj's representative is preaching, and the villagers come to his village, and as Gurudev's entourage were preparing to leave London for Latin America, I was in the room with him, and he was telling me this story, and he said, Maharaj, you will not believe how happy my life was in Bhamanpar. And I was thinking, like, normally, when people tell you about their life before connecting with Krishna consciousness, it's some, you know, everything was going wrong. I lost this, I lost that, you know. They're telling some, it seems like the world's falling apart, and then they connect with the devotees, and it's, you know, that kind of thing. That's one story. It's not the only story, but that's more typical. Chatur vidha bhajante mam jana sukritinor jana. Krishna telling Arjuna, four types of people who are sukritivan. It's not everybody. Many people have these circumstances. Same with those who are sukritivan, who've accumulated a sufficient sukriti, when they're put under these four social circumstances, they have a tendency to take up spiritual culture, or more specifically, Krishna consciousness. But here, Gurudev is saying, he's smiling, I was so happy there. And he said, I loved everyone. Everyone loved me. He said, the birds and the trees, sometimes he would talk about, that's how before watch, you would tell time, the sounds of the birds and the color of the sky. And he said, all the animals, I love them. They loved me. The trees. Sometimes he would climb the trees. And last and last, he said, even the rickshaw wallas. Like there were, you know, there was like the animation, you know, and then rickshaw wallas. And like, they love me. I love them. And he said, and then Guru Maharaj's representative came to the town preaching. And he said, talking this nonsense. Your mother is nothing. Your father is nothing. This world is nothing. You'll have to give, sooner or later, it will vanish. You have to give it up. But that's the way he said, talking, that's our philosophy, right? He said, talking this nonsense. And then, because Gurudev speaks with double entendre, or entendre, if there are any French people, you know. Oh, there you go. What was it? Double entendre? Something like that? Yeah. He said, but I could, it struck my heart, and I could not deny the truth of what he was saying. And then his mood shifted. So he said all these things. Like, you'll have to give up this world sooner or later. And he said, it struck my heart, and I could not deny the truth of what he was saying. And then he said, he tried to get out of it by saying, I agree to go to the mat, but if we go, we have to go, like, right now. He can't say, like, I'll be back tomorrow. Nothing like, we have to go instantly. He sort of threw that back. And the man said, all right. And that meant they had to swim across the river, and he comes to the mat, and that devotee can see some apprehension, because he's like, Gurudev saying, I have read about, you know, the Ramayana, Mahabharata, I know what an ashram is, and I have some idea of what it should look like. And this is 1947, so now Gurudev has a little cement structure, like the two rooms, what we later was like a Ranimar's room, that was like, one room was Guru Maharaj, the other one was the deity in the beginning. But so he sees this, and that devotee sees there's some like apprehension, like this is the ashram of the guru. And said the devotee turned and said, it may be a small, you know, a building, but there's a big guru inside. And you're like, oh, all right. And he meets Guru Maharaj, and one of the things Guru Maharaj says is two things. Sometimes Guru Maharaj would say things that are meant to be a test. So he said, and how long will you stay? And that hurt the Guru. I'm like, well, if I'm coming, it's forever. But it's like Guru Maharaj's test. How long you'll stay? And then he said, the more test was, he said, are you prepared to follow me and not your mind? You'll listen to me and follow what I say and not your mind. Gurudev has such a great sense of humor. He smiled and he said, I was young, so I said yes. He said, I did. How could I know, anticipate what that could mean in the future? But everyone who comes in connection with Krishna consciousness, there's a similar proposition there. Because sometimes people say, well, I don't know if I can make these vows and I'll do this forever. But I think, like, you know, what if people, I mean, to give an example, they were getting married and someone said honestly, like, well, I don't know if I can actually keep these vows forever, Your Honor, or the, who is the priest? No, they understand. They're going to try their best to do that, right? And that means they're taking a vow. Yes, I will do this. Someone could point out, well, statistics say otherwise, all this. Still, it won't prevent somebody from making the attempt. But anyway, and we know that after some time that Srila Gurudev's mother is like feeling his separation and wants him to come home. Like I remember when we were in India in the 70s and the early 70s, the most famous so-called playback singer, that means pop singer by another name. They call them playback singers in India. She's ubiquitous. Padma Shri Lata Mangeshkar. She was the, so any movie you see, it's her voice. Someone's lip syncing that. But one of the songs that was inescapable, like when you're traveling and preaching and you were just hearing the Mario, it was this song, which basically is called Sannyasi Come Home. Because you'd hear it going, Sannyasi, be like echoing everywhere, you know. I go, what is she saying? And they go, she's telling Sannyasi come home. You know, like, it was some, you know, Bollywood movie. But in India, like, that's a real, you know, Academy Award winning movie. So this was sort of like that. She wants him to come home, her son. And like they do in India, you get the people in the village, the local pundit, the local, and get the group, and they go to the Chaitanya Saraswat Math to retrieve, you know, Om Vishnu Pad, Srila Bhakti Sundar Govinda Dev Goswami. Because we used to hear this story at the Math about some devotee, they would say, who was so determined that when people tried to remove him, the Indian windows have bars, used to just have bars and no screens, but shutters and bars, that he was holding onto the bars and they were trying to pull him off and he wouldn't let go. But later we found out that was Gurudev. Sometimes they would say, a devotee, but then we found that it was him and they're trying to do that. And Gurudev said, one old man said, not to force, like he didn't like that. He said, he should come of his own volition, you know, and that everyone agreed to. If he decides, you can talk to him and try and convince him otherwise. And if you do, he's free to go. That's what Guru Maharaj said. You can speak to him, because Guru Maharaj, as he told me once, and it was my own experience, but later it corroborated my own experience. He said about himself, he said, it takes two meetings. And I sort of went like, uh-huh, like I know that. And I thought, how do I know that? Because my own example is that after one meeting, I thought, he is perfect. Everything he's saying to me is perfect. This is the most wonderful thing. I want to make this connection. But then have to go somewhere and then the mind comes and starts saying, that was like too perfect. Maybe the mind is our enemy, as Saraswati Thakur said, the enemy of Jiva, trying to steal her wealth, her serving potential, by making all these other suggestions. So the second meeting confirms that everything you felt in the first meeting was true, not that the otherwise. So Guru Maharaj, I found it interesting that he said that. Two meetings. And so by now he is with Gurudev, and also this is their pastimes. You know, there's some drama. There must be some drama in the pastimes of the devotees. Because as Prabhupada says about his coming under the shelter of the lotus feet of Saraswati Thakur, he said, what do you call it? We met by divine order, divine arrangement. But still, there's some dramatic tension. The fact they're coming to take him away. He's holding on to the bars. A man intervenes. And they, Guru Maharaj says, just talk. And if he wants to go, he can go. But the other side of that coin is the implication. And if he wants to stay, he's going to stay. You're not going to force him to leave. And of course, he does not. But rather, in time, and this is the point I was trying to get to from the beginning, but a little circuitous route, was that Gurudev converts his mother, brothers, everybody to be disciples of Srila Guru Maharaj. So we're told putra means put. I don't know if I can say this in the Russian audience. No. In Sanskrit, put means hell. And tra means to liberate. So putra is the name for son. Putri is the name for daughter. Who saves one from hell. They liberate one from hell. So that's what the, particularly the son, but daughter also, that's what, if you're, otherwise they say, if your son does not become such a devotee or liberator, then they are mutra, means urine. So they're saying, rather than producing a child, it goes to the other extreme, not very palatable. They're saying putra. So Gurudev, the maximum you say gift or benevolence they could hope to get from him, he gave to them beyond that, because beyond mere mukti in the general sense, but taking them into the plane of Krishna identity, Krishna Das, Radha Dasi, into that plane. So happy ending, in that sense. And do you want to add something, Madhusudan Maharaj? Yeah. Okay. All right. So, Sri Yukta Tarangini Devi Ki Jai, Hare Krishna. Yeah.
Maharaj, there is one question. From Colombia, from Narasimhapalli Prabhu.
Yeah.
We used to hear that there are two kind of hits to the ego. The one.
Two kinds of what?
Hits.
H-I-T-S?
Yes.
Things that hit the ego.
Yeah. Hits to the ego. The one which softens and the one that toughens. How to balance our identity, which one are we getting from spiritual practices?
One of Gurudev's famous talks, I think Madhusudan Maharaj, you were involved in a publication, this one called Demolishing the Pillars of Ego. Yeah. So it's interesting that he referred to ego as pillars. It's the pillars of which the misconceived self is, it's the foundation of the misconceived self. Right? So he's saying it has to be demolished. Guru Maharaj, in the books we published, you'll see him talking about the dissolving the ego, the total dissolution of ego, but not leaving zero. Right? So we say ahankar means false ego, identifying with the body, mind, senses, intellect, as oneself, as opposed to one's spiritual identity. So in the most basic sense, like the aphorism is there, aham brahmasmi. Krishna tells Arjuna, about the indriyas, the senses. Yo budhe paratastu sa. What is this loka about the senses, superior to the objects of the senses? Indriyani paranyahur indriyebhya paramanaha manasastu parabudhe yo budhe paratastu sa. So first have to identify where is the soul located. So he's saying there are the objects of senses in the world, things that became seen, heard, tasted, touched, smelt, felt, that the objective world. Saying the superior to that are the senses, the active senses, like the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, etc. Superior to that is the mind, which is the seat of all sense experience. Because it's with the mind, being mindful, we use the active senses to perceive things, to see, hear, taste, touch, smell, and feel. Right? So the subject soul is, through the medium of mind, experiencing the world. Superior to the mind, we're told intelligence, because the mind lacks discrimination. The intelligence discriminates. Stop looking at this, or stop tasting this, or this is beneficial, this is not. It's making some a value judgment on sense experience. That's why the intelligence infused with spiritual instructions makes good decisions, right? Someone can be supremely intelligent, but if they don't have a proper conception of their self, that's also dealt with in the Bhagavatam. Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavata kinchana sarvai gunais tatra samasate sura harava bhaktasya kuto mahadguna manoratena sato davato mahi bahi. It's interesting, it says manorata, like ratiyat, chariot, manorata. Same, the chariot of the mind, like Upanishads say, the senses are like horses, and the minds on there's the chariot of the mind, and the uncontrolled senses are like wild horses, just going in different directions, and that's a terrifying ride for the soul. And you have to, you know, rein in the senses through regulation, spiritual, the exercise of spiritual intelligence. But anyway, there it says, well, what if we say someone is very intelligent in this world, but they're not devotionally evolved? It's saying they have actually no truly good qualities because they're riveted to the mundane. And what is the mundane? Just what does Charitamritam say? Dvaita dvaita badre sab manudharm e bale manda e sabram. In this world, it's compared to like a dream, saying whether you have a good dream or a bad dream, it's still a dream. There's nothing substantial there. So it's saying it's like that, these relative evaluations. Something's good or bad. It has to have a spiritual basis to have some substance to it. So beyond the intellect, then ego, then the soul plane. That's what Krishna is telling Arjuna. And when someone is situated in that soul plane, as Krishna says, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nasochati in Gita, Nakankshati, Samak Sarveshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. Saying then, Brahma Bhuta, you're situated on the spiritual platform, Prasanatma, they're satisfied internally, happy spiritually, Nasochati and Nakankshati. They're not hankering for mundane things. Neither are they lamenting to acquire them. Neither are they lamenting the loss of the mundane, including prestige, which is a mundane thing. The opinion, how other people think of us. Right? People seriously interested in spiritual culture and making progress, that's no longer their consideration, is what the mass think of me or this pursuit. When Rupa Goswami is talking about Baba Bhakti and the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and outlines maybe 10 symptoms, one is man shunyata. There's the absence of ego in the sense that there's nothing in this world that they hanker for in terms of approval. Not the opinions of others, the mass, etc. But it's not that they are just anarchistic and seek no one's approval. No, in this world, it's the opposite of what I've told the pragmatists say. They say, we should concern ourselves with whose opinions matter. And we don't know whether there's gods and goddesses and all this. We don't really know. We can't prove it. But what we do know, you're there and I'm there. Your opinion matters, my opinion matters. Let's deal with that. So God, all out the window, which is an indirect way of putting yourself on the throne of divinity. That's humanism in a nutshell. Man should be at the center of all things, right? Because rationally speaking, we can't prove or disprove the existence of divinity. But the spiritually progressive person, their position is, Guru was talking about democracy and the famous quote of Abraham Lincoln where he said, for the people, by the people, of the people, something like that. And Guru Maharaj said, not for the people, that's good, he said, but not by the people. Who are these people? Brahma, Pramada, Viparlipsha, Karna, Pattava, with their imperfect senses, their imperfect observations, their imperfect reading of the environment. Jiva Goswami said, they have a tendency to cheat, to misrepresent knowledge or information to their egocentric benefit, imperfect senses, right? We misread things all the time. What else? Tendency to commit mistakes, to error is human, and cheating. So cheating, imperfect senses, mistakes, and illusion. That's going to be Brahma, Pramad, Viparlipsha, Karna, Pattava. So he's saying, so people with these disqualifications, they'll give guidance? No. He's saying the guidance should come from the perfect, not the imperfect. No amount of finite is equal to the infinite. Right? The imperfect doesn't gradually turn into the perfect, right? The perfect reveals itself into this plane. As he says in the beginning of Sri Guru and His Grace, to err is human, to err is inevitable for everyone, considering that we're not perfect. Right? Saying, but then this interesting point comes, he's saying, We're imperfect, and therefore we're prone to commit errors. Commonly understood, universal maxim. He said, but still, there is an element within us that seeks perfection. So that's, in one sense, it's peculiar. We all acknowledge our shortcomings and our imperfections, but why is it? What is this thing within us that seeks perfection? Like in this world, generally, some people who are successful to the extreme, they're known as perfectionists. Right? And maybe sometimes with some pride, or it means non-compromising. They want perfection. Right? So Gurmukh said that we want, still in the midst of so much imperfection and personal disqualifications or faults, we're seeking perfection. Then he makes the next point. So the reason I put that there, I mean, he said to put it there, but also I noticed by studying this and publishing this how it's step by step, it's the most rational presentation I've ever heard for the necessity of guru. So in the next stage, if someone's following what he's saying, then the next thing is, he's saying, and if you could give this to yourself, you would have it by now. No, it's all, we don't need anyone. It's all within us. Saying, if that were true, you would have it. Why are you still without this and hankering for this, striving for this, if it was something you could confer upon yourself? He said, so that implies you're seeking for something that another source shall have to connect you. And he said, that is the perfect. So here, rather than using words like God and spirit, he's using these rational terms. So he's saying imperfect, perfect. So the imperfect is hankering for perfection. Who can give you perfection is perfection. Perfection personified. When the man challenged Guru Maharaj by saying, if the finite can know the infinite, he's not infinite. Guru Maharaj's response is, no, if the infinite cannot make itself known to the finite, he's not infinite. And this is the beauty of theistic culture and the theistic project. And what is astonishing, thrilling, and exciting, that the infinite can reveal itself to the finite, that the perfect can make itself known to the imperfect. Who, Guru Maharaj adds, we're imperfect, how? And this should make the humanist, how he's saying, a part of the perfect appears to be imperfect for some time. It's not a permanent condition. Being flawed is not a permanent condition. Right? So the imperfect making itself known to the perfect, that means revealed truth, revelation, beyond the imperfection of the senses and the human erring tendency, subjecting to illusion, and the cheating propensity, that revealed truth can descend into this plane. The absolute can descend into not only general relative circumstances, but your unique individual relative circumstance. Raga Bhakti ultimately implies, like, it's almost like tailor-made devotion. It's unique in every case. When Rupa Goswami is talking about Vidhi Bhakti, the state of spiritual practices, which Guru Maharaj points out, as long as one is not on the raga stage, they must follow this and be regulated by it. But it's very interesting. He tells you step by step how this works as a novice and novitiate and upward and onward. But when it comes to the raga bhakti section of the book, he's saying this won't be step by step because it's unique in each case. So what I will do, I'll just give you examples of devotees who are raga bhaktas, and you'll understand. It's very different when the teaching comes. Then he starts giving examples of devotees and shining a spotlight on the type of devotion they have. It's not in, now in the step-by-step sequence, per se. So, man shunyata. It means that one of the symptoms of bhava bhakti, the blossoming stage just before Krishna praying, saying they have no regard, ego, about the prestige of this world because they're so absorbed in internal culture, in the spiritual interior, It's of no consequence to them. That's why when the Digvijay conquering pundit approached Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami to argue with them, you know, in a debate contest, Rupa Goswami is like writing Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Uchul Anilamani, these other books like Laghu Bhagavatamritam, you know, oh, I'll sign your paper, defeated by you. He's like, well, that was easy. Goes to Sanatana Goswami, writing Brihad Bhagavatamritam, Hari Bhakti, like, where do I sign? Okay, there. Right. They have no ego, like, they're signing. I was defeated by him in debate. Right. But, of course, when he brings that to Jiva Goswami said, no, that cannot be true. He's saying, because Rupa and Sanatana are his gurus. No, it's not true. No, it's true. I have the name. Show me that. He shows him the paper, and Jiva Goswami tears the paper, throws it away. You have to defeat me. I'm their, menial servant. I'm like the lowest disciple they have. I'm no one special. You have to, if you can defeat me. And of course, Jiva Goswami defeats that person. But then on theme here about ego, some people, unfortunately, suggest that this is some display of ego by Jiva Goswami that is not in character for a Vaishnava. And going so far as to say, you know, like Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami saying, Jagai Madhai Hoite Murise Lagishta. Puri Sera Kita Hoite Muri Sela Gishna. That I'm more sinful than Jagai and Madhai. I'm lower than the worm in the stool. If you, what does he say? If you hear my name, you'll lose your pious credits. If you vibrate my name, you'll go down. You know. They're saying that's the humility. And here's Jiva Goswami asserting himself, this ego assertion. In debate with a pundit. But Saraswati Thakur saying, no, Jiva Goswami, he's willing to sacrifice his reputation as a humble Vaishnava in defense of Rupa and Sanatan. And this is what we call Acharya Abhiman. He's asserting now on behalf of the Guru and Vaishnava. And Guru Maharaj once said, about Mahaprabhu's teachings, Trinadapi Suni Chena Turorapi Suvishna, you know, be humbler than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree, offer all respect to others and expect none for yourself. Once Guru Maharaj said, Trinadapi Suni Chena, to whom? He said, if someone comes to molest the deity, the Vaishnava of the temple, I should practice Trinadapi Suni Chena. No, then like fire. That I will come to the defense of the deity of Guru and Vaishnav. So Saraswati Thakur saying, Jiva Goswami, as to protect the reputation and the dignity of Rupa and Sanatan, he's willing to sacrifice his prestige, his pratishtha. It's not for pratishtha, he's sacrificing pratishtha. Name, fame, self-assertion. So what was the question again? It's about ego.
How to balance or identify.
Oh, how to balance. Yeah. Oh, and I was saying about Acharya Abhiman. So Saraswati Thakur, Acharya Abhiman means sometimes he's saying, look, I'm the guru, you're the disciple, you're a fool. And correcting. So Saraswati Thakur would say, if I do that, he said, that is my pralap. It's a stage of delirium where I, normally he's saying, dashoshmi, I'm your servant. He's saying, but sometimes I, this delirium comes over me where I think I'm the master and you're the disciple and I correct you. He's almost apologetic, saying like, it's a delirious stage. And then I come out of that delirium and dashoshmi, I'm your servant. And as we told, he's calling his disciples Prabhu, which means Lord. Usually only Guru was called Prabhu. And he's calling disciple Prabhu, which means he sees, he's not thinking, I'm the master and you're the servant. Rather, Guru Maharaj said, a high level, Maha Bhagavata Guru, he doesn't accept anyone as a disciple. He sees them as all expansions of his guru. And if anything, he said, just like the pujari or the cook, they're taking some fruit and they wash the fruit, peel the fruit, and they prepare it. They make it fit to be offered to the deity. So the guru, with his instructions, he's really serving the disciple by the instruction, cleansing away any impurities and making them fit to be offered to Krishna. And what do? When something is offered to Krishna, right? We take it upon our head as worshipable. Saying, so he's offered these disciples to Krishna, now they're worshipable. So they're giving dandavat to him, and he's saying, dashoshmi. So then we will see, if we look at this from, you know, and make some observations, that the ego of the servitor, that is worshipable for in service, and for self-assertion, that is the what we're cautioned against to avoid. Pratishta, one of its meanings is self, to establish yourself. Jiva Goswami is establishing Rupa and Sanatan. Doesn't always mean to be passive. Like Guru Maharaj said, Hanuman's seva was to burn down Lanka. Right? Don't try this at home. But and what I thought of some other things, but yes. Anything else?
There is such saying, this is a question from my side. I don't know if there is an exact analogy, idiomatic analogy in English. I didn't have time to check it. In debate, we come to truth. In argue, there is a
where,
truth.
How do we know that?
So that is the saying.
Yes, so, but I don't know if I accept that.
So, yeah, that is
because
that.
Actually, in England, Oxford is famous. They have some, I forget the name, but it's a debating society. And what comes to mind is they present a topic, and these two sides argue this. And in the end, the people vote who won. But it doesn't necessarily, they will say who they think, and they take, what's the word? When you ask everybody,
a vote.
They vote who won the debate. But it doesn't mean that what they were saying is true. You might have a poor debater on the side of truth and an expert on the side of falsity. That's also possible. And but say in a perfect world, this idea that you arrive at the truth through debate is not accept the ultimate truth. Relative truth, we understand that process, right, of, it has another word. It's like, what do you say? It's almost like the Hegelian dialectic, you know, thesis, antithesis, to go back and forth and get further at truth. So there's some relative truth in that, but when it comes to absolute truth, it's interesting, the Upanishads, they make a point of saying no to this. And the same thing is reiterated in the Bhagavatam. In the Upanishads, they say, what is that? Nayam atma pravachanena labhyo namedaya na bahuna srutena. Tame vaisha vivrinute tena labhyas tashaisha atma vivrinute tanum swam. You see, because if that were true, that would eliminate the personality of Godhead. You understand? It's similar to the pragmatist. That's why many of these schools of thought, they have some similarity. Do you understand? If that's the way you get a truth, you don't need revealed truth. We will get it that way by debate, by argument and counter-argument. That's why the famous sloka in the Bhagavatam, Tarko Pratishtanat, because here Pratishtha means to establish, they're saying the truth will not be established by Tark and Vitark. It means argument and counter-argument. And so then they say, then what do we do? It says, Mahajano Yena Kata Sapanta. You follow the path chalked out by the Mahajans. And then they list, who are these Mahajans? Swayambhur, Kapilo Manu, etc. So, what is the question, though? So we're being told that argument and counter-argument is not a path to the absolute truth. The last line says, Tashyaisa Atma Vivrinute Tanum Swam. He reveals himself to whom he chooses to reveal himself, through whom he chooses. It's his prerogative. And that's a very beautiful thing. So you understand, because then that means you don't have to be a scholar to become a God-realized soul. Otherwise, it would be indirectly exalting the position of jnanis and people who are not scholars and not intellectuals. They don't have a chance at understanding ultimate and absolute truth. Whereas in the devotional path, by simple acts of devotion, someone can realize Krishna. Think about it. Krishna can get as philosophical as you want, right? There's no shortage of philosophy on his side. We can look at the Vedanta Sutra and be wowed by the commentaries and all these things. But if you look in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's saying very simple things. And as Prabhupada said once, if you want to understand Bhagavad Gita, you have to at least theoretically accept Krishna's divinity to understand what's going on here. I used to, when I would speak at schools where there's a type of Catholic school where the teachers are Jesuit priests. And Jesuits are famous for being like scholarly and somewhat open-minded, you could say. So I know something that the Jesuits say. So I would say this at the beginning of the class, and the Jesuit, they like, and they'd say, before I start speaking, what I'm going to ask you to do is to, I'm asking for the temporary suspension of disbelief. All right, so I'm now going to say things that normally you may not believe in or do not believe in. But as the Father here approves, while I'm speaking, you have his permission to engage in the temporary suspension of disbelief. You don't have to be, disbelief should not be your default position. You're going to be open to try and understand how someone could believe like this. Right. This is a wonderful thing, actually. So Prabhupada would say, to really grasp Bhagavad Gita and its message, you have to at least theoretically accept Krishna's position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then that gives more importance to some very simple statements that Krishna says. Like I've told this before, when devotees say, how to preach or what examples to give? Think about it. Krishna's situated in the heart of every living being, every living entity, all time, all space, all creations. He knows what sum total history of every jiva soul. So I'm just approaching it this way to make a point. So if he gives an example, it must be a good one. What to speak of, his default position is omniscience, right? But I'm just saying, if that's not enough for you, that it's God speaking, then if you factor in the Paramatma, if he gives an example, it must be something like that works. You're saying, well, I don't know, maybe we should give another one. So in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where all these slokas there on Atmagyan, the science of the soul and the self, dehi nos men yata dehe, as we're in the embryonic body in the womb of the mother, then a baby, a toddler, a child, a student, a teenager, an adult, middle age, old age. He's showing this cycle. So what I thought many years ago, why this is brilliant, he's not giving some example and say, well, I don't know, who's experienced that? If you look on the internet, almost with great regularity, I just saw another one. There's a photographer somewhere who's been photographing himself every day for the last 30 years with the same expression, really, it happens all the time, but it just happened again. This guy, 30 years, every day, at a certain time, he takes a picture of himself, and it's almost identical, with the same camera, same background, and he tries to have the same expression on his face. So when you put all these pictures together, you see this transition, this physical, objective transition that's very dramatic, that you wouldn't be able to tell if you didn't know that it was that same person, but there's something that's been constant throughout. That's what Krishna, that's his example. He's saying, you've gone through all these bodily changes and survived. Another way of looking at it is he's saying, you have survived the death of the body so many times. Within your experience in this life, it's not now I'm telling you something that's beyond your experience. This is within your experience. So many bodies, you've sustained the death of that body. Tata dehantara prapti, diros tatramuyati. At the time of death, overall, you'll take another one. And those who are dira, they won't be bewildered by this. It's a very powerful example. And all the other examples he gives. He says, like, when your garments get old and worn, like these shirts, I've noticed, because I thought they were going to last forever, they start to get little holes here and there, and they're starting to, like, unravel and fall apart. And I'm thinking, like, oh, I have four of them. I thought it was going to last forever. And I see now they're starting to, I'll have to think about replacing them. So what does Krishna say? Like the clothes that you wear become old and tattered and they start to unravel. The body is like that. And then you'll take another one. And he goes, each one slightly nuanced in a different way. For the soul, there's no birth, nor death, nor having once been, does he ever cease to be. He's unborn, undying. He can't be burned by fire, drowned by water, withered by air. He's telling all these, one after another, to give you a clear idea of what your spiritual locus standi is, in a sense. It's in that plane above the ego. That's where it is. And from there, you enact your spiritual program. But this was your question, and about debate, tark and vitark, argument and counter-argument. So Arjun, he's first presenting his assessment of things, if you want to look at it this way, right? And we could say at best, even though he's Arjun, in this context, it's a finite perspective, right? It's from his position. He's saying, this doesn't look like a good time. I'm inextricably surrounded by my karma right now. There's the person who taught me, my martial arts guru, is there on the other side. So guru, hatvahi, mahanubhava. Now I should engage in guru killing. Right? And all of my relative, he's presenting his perspective, his finite perspective of the situation that's insurmountable, inescapable. He's inescapably surrounded by karma that he's generated. And he's become bewildered to the point like he's totally besides himself. And what are we told? Krishna, he's smiling when he starts speaking to Arjuna. Not like a big smile. It says a little smile. He's like, And then he starts telling Arjuna, Nanu Sochandi Pandita. A pundit with socha. Remember we said someone on the spiritual platform, no socha ti, and he's saying, these are not the kind of words we would expect from some an exalted person like you, you know, who's so realized and lamenting over some, you know, material circumstances. He starts speaking to him. Prabhupada says, why is Krishna smiling? He says, because a dear friend decided to become a disciple. That's one thing he says. But he also says, so now friendly talks have stopped. Now Krishna is going to tell Arjuna some, stern reality. Some of it's going to be a bitter pill to swallow. Right? But what is he offering? We could say, if Arjuna was finite perspective, what Krishna is now offering is infinite perspective. That's the shift. Right? So how, we're saying, here's the sum total of the finite will never equal the infinite. You have two jivas arguing back and forth at some point and thinking they're going to arrive at some truth. Then you have the supreme absolute truth. Now we're going, instead of that, which is a kind of descending process, he's there personified. He can talk to you. He can enlighten you. And he's going to tell you what is the absolute truth. How good is that? Right? And that's what he's doing in Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. But it's infinite. So Vedanti Tat, Tattva Vidas, Tattvam Yajjnanam Advayam, Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti, Shabyate. Saying there's only one thing to know. It's interesting. That's what the Upanishads say too. Try to know the one thing upon knowing which everything is known. Right? I mentioned that Einstein's mistress, some young girl in Princeton, when he was staying, she said, she noticed like he didn't have a notebook writing things down. She said, you ought to carry a notebook around for all your ideas. And Einstein said, I only have one idea. And I'm always thinking about it. I don't need a notebook. I only have this one idea and I'm preoccupied with that. What is it? I'm trying to understand that one thing upon knowing which everything is known. So it was Upanishadic in scope. That's what you're told. There's always and only this one thing, but that one thing has variegated position. Brahma, Paramatma, Bhagavan. And devotion is all about Bhagavan cultivation. Right? Brahma, impersonal Brahma, which is really, ultimately, in one sense, nothing is actually impersonal because it's Krishna's effulgent, made it spiritual, but perceived from a certain angle of vision. Paramatma is the target of the yogis. But Bhagavan is where devotion proper begins, because it means Shakti and Shaktiman, Krishna, you know, Lakshmi Devi and Narayan, Sita and Ram, Radha, you know, Rukmini and Dwarkanath, or Dwarakesh, same thing, and Radha and Krishna. But not by argument. And I told you that story recently, Ramanuja, arguing with the Mayavadi for what, 21 days, 17, whatever. And he's thinking, and remember, Ramanuja knows every argument, every sloka. He's supremely qualified. And he's defeated so many Mayavadis, but for some reason he can't defeat this one. And He's thinking, if I can't properly, and again, back to ego, he's ego, he's saying, if I can't properly represent the dignity of the Sampradaya, I should vacate my seat. I'm not worthy to be called an acharya of this line. And he's thinking, today I will vacate my seat, you know. And they go to meet, and before the arguments began, the man on the other side said, actually, I've been thinking about all the things that you said and reconsidering what you say. I now realize that what you say is true. So it wasn't just he heard all the arguments, but at a certain point, it's like Sarvabhauma and Gopinathacharya. Gopinathacharya is like, you quote your slokas, I'll quote mine. He's saying, but why you don't understand Mahaprabhu's divinity? It's not argument, counter-argument, sloka, your sloka, my sloka. What is it? Atapite deva padambuja dvaya prashadale shanogriyite. He goes, you have to have a little mercy. And Sarvabhauma is like, oh, so you've got the mercy and I don't. Oh, okay. What's the evidence you've got the mercy and I don't? He said, because I can understand who he is, that he's Swayam Bhagavan lying there before us, and this escaped you who know everything. But then, I mean, this is the leela of the upgrading of Brihaspati, the priest of the demigods, descending and getting upgraded in Gaura Leela. And by then we know he tries to upgrade Mahaprabhu and teach him Vedanta. And, you know, after a few days, we're going by 5, 6, you know, he's saying, you know, I know this is deep stuff. And, you know, if there's something you don't understand, you can ask. He's telling that to Mahaprabhu. Saying, but you should at least, like, give, like, nod your head that you know, when I'm telling things to show, like, that you get it. And Mahaprabhu was saying, oh, actually, I understand Vedanta perfectly. I just don't understand what you're talking about. And Sarva, like, oh. And then, you know, he gives his 9 versions of Atmarama Slok. Mahaprabhu gives 18. Gradually, he realizes who he's dealing with. But it's not just the argument and counter-argument. It's that he gets some mercy. And then he's enlightened. So in the world of rational thinkers, to tell them, well, to really understand this, you need to, because it's bad enough you have to tell them it's faith, but if on top of that you say, and you need some mercy, they're going to go, oh, you know, yes, mercy. They can only use words like mercy, virtue, it's in quotes, because lest they be guilty of the sin of sounding too sincere. That's a fault in the modern world. They don't ever want to be like, sound like you're a believer, you're too sincere. Right? In literature, the critics, they'll say about some writer when they're reviewing their work, about the author, say, she tackles the big questions, but doesn't insult the reader's intelligence by offering answers. And when I read that, I thought, if I only knew this when I was in school. And they're saying, why didn't you do this assignment? I'm saying, you know, I'm dealing with the big questions, but I don't want to insult your intelligence by offering answers. How insane that is. But that's what they say, deals with the big questions, but doesn't insult the reader's intelligence by offering answers. And people say, oh, this is very deep. When in fact, we cannot shy away from or apologize for the fact that you need some mercy. What is, you know, as we told, you know, beauty over power? There's a series of them, actually, that I did once. Beauty over power, substance over form. They're all graphics, actually. S over something over form, H over heart over intellect. There was, but the was, oh, and then M over J, mercy over justice. Tark v. Tark, that's like the justice thing, back and forth, back and forth. Mercy transcends that. Mercy, a love and affection. Krishna is the Lord of love and affection. That accommodates all faults, or even, inadequacies. Right? Ananyas chintayantamam yejana pariyupasate. Tesham shatabhyaktanam yogakshemam vahamyaham, where Krishna is saying, if there's something lacking in my devotee, I personally compensate for that. How can we think not if we consider properly who is Krishna? And what would we prefer? Like my own ability, as Guru said, to my own limited understanding of the limited versus infinite revelation from the infinite himself. No comparison. So the devotee, they're so addicted to that, you can say, that there's nothing in this world that is capable of charming or seducing them. We're talking about, you know, the higher substantial devotees. So Rupa Goswami says, man shunyata. And just to finish on this, so if they don't care about the opinions of the people of this world, is there anyone's opinion they care about? Yes. Saraswati Thakura says, Vaishnavi pratishta tati koro nishta. They're very concerned. Like we were praising Yudhamani Prabhu the other day, saying to Gurudev, do you want this or not? That's what I want to know. They're very concerned. What about Guru and Vaishnav? What do they have to say? What is their point of view? That they're very concerned with, their opinion. And being concerned with the opinion of Guru and Vaishnav, Sadhu Shastra Guru and Vaishnav, makes them immune, in a sense, to the infectious misconceptions of this world and seeking after their approval. They only seek the approval of Guru and Vaishnav, Sadhu Shastra Guru Vaishnav. Hare Krishna.